it has been a long day. Fortunately, this is not one. And so I will be talking about a work which I did with an EGAS and Faulkner, which are MIT students, and with Krishna and with Wittmann. So the two papers with Krishna and the Wittmann, which appeared last July and last December, and then we have another in progress. So if you heat the QCD above the decombinement temperature, then the light quark mesons, they no longer exist just due to the decombinement. But if you look at the heavy quark mesons,
that is not
obvious. Yeah, it's not obvious. So but if you look at the heavy quarkonium, they have a much better chance to exist above QC. It's because they typically have a smaller size. And So the screening effect with the quark gluon plasma may not dissociate them at TC, but there will be a temperature, say, which I will call TB. So above this temperature, if the screening length of the quark gluon plasma becomes smaller than the typical size of the meson, and then they will dissociate due to color screening, and then the quarkonium will be stable. So, for example, in the lattice calculation, people have seen indications that chip psi, which is a CC bar bound state, may be able to survive, say, up to QTC, and say upsilon may even survive up to 3 or 4 TC, where the excited state already dissociates about 1 or 2 TC. So, due to this reason, so has been proposed many years ago that the quarkonium suppression, for example, in the heavy air condition, should be a very sensitive probe of the formation of the QGP, because you should be able to see the screening effect from the quarkonium suppression. So normally, people study this question of the quarkonium suppression in the lattice calculation. Say they either study the steady quark potential between the infinite massive quarks, and then use the potential to construct the bound states, or they study, say, directly the spectral functions to read about the spectrum. But the quark suppression and quarkonium suppression in the high VM condition is actually a very complicated issue. There's still a long way to go from the lattice calculation to actually the real heavy iron film knowledge. So in order to do that, one needs to understand the many complicated questions. And for example, in the initial stage, one needs to understand the initial conditions of heavy iron collisions, and also the formation time and formation mechanism of chip psi and etc. Also, in the intermediate stage, and typically, the heavy quarkonium, if they are produced, they could move very fast relative to the hot medium. And so the question arises whether the screening effect depends on the velocity, for example, whether the dissociation temperature depends on the velocity part. And then, in the final stage, in the hydronization stage, one also have the question whether one can form new, say, chip size in the final stage. And today, I will concentrate on this question, whether a velocity have any effect on the screening between the quark and anti-quark in the medium. And this question is very hard to do on the lattice, even though if you just put the time and put a little bit of velocity to the quarks, and so I will try to get some insights from the string theory. So here's my plan. So first I will study as everybody else in the equal to 4 super Young-Liu theory, and I will look at the potentials between a pair of infinitely heavy external quark and anti-quark, and let them move with some velocity, and to see how does the screening length depend on the velocity. And then we will go to a slightly more complicated model to deform the incompatible Super-Yang-Mills theory a little bit. So incompatible Super-Yang-Mills by itself does not have dynamic form, so we can only introduce the signal form. So you can deform the theory a little bit into an input 2 Super-Yang-Mills theory. And then with the NF flavor, much smaller than C, so in this theory it's still manageable. And then we study what are the dispersion relations of masses in the medium. And then, from there, we can directly study the velocity dependence of stability of the mesons. And then, interspersed between my discussion of the string theory, I will speculate what could happen in the QCD.
Why do you need enough, like, one flavor would be enough?
Oh, yeah, one flavor would be enough, that's right, yeah. Any questions?
What's the difference between 1 and 2 again for the physics you want to get out?
So the 2 will be dynamical and quark and the real mesons. And the first is just the potential between the... That's right.
But why do you need these mesons? Because mostly it was a good gluonic media, right?
That's right.
So in this way, if you...
He wants to study mesons.
A meson...
Like JSI.
Right, but the size made of heavy quark, but I mean heavy quarks he has anyway, but I mean besides heavy quark, why you need anything else?
And this is an infinite heavy quark. So I want to have heavy, so this second is to have heavy but not so heavy.
Yeah, okay. So it's one flavor in this size.
That's right. So let me proceed. Just remind you. So we have seen many times today. So let me just review it very quickly. So the incompatible Super-Yang-Mills theory is related to the type 2B theory. And if you go to finite temperature, it corresponds to input a black hole in an decision space. And if you go to large NC, then that's the hook-stopping limit. And you go to the classical gravity limit on the other side. And also remind you that incompatible Super-Yang-Mills is conformally invariant, so there's no scale in the theory. So in this whole talk, I will focus on the theory in the finite temperature and in the large NC, large to hook top limit. So this corresponding to study the classical gravity in the AdS black hole geometry. So again, you have seen this metric quite a few times today. So this is the black hole metric, and so the R is the curvature radius of ADS, and the horizon is at R equal to R0, which becomes equal to 0. And so one thing to emphasize about this metric is that the black hole horizon actually extends. It has a topology of a plane. It's not a spherical horizon, it has a topology of a plane. So it's parallel to the 3 plus 1 dimensional space-time. And the Hawking temperature is related to the horizon size, and then it's identified to the Yang-Mills theory temperature, and then the one of alpha prime, which is the string tension, is related to the topology. Right. So to help you visualize it, this R directly is the extra dimension, the fifth dimension, orthogonal to our space-time. So you should imagine at each constant R, there's a 3 plus 1 dimensional space-time. And the horizon is somewhere at R equal to R0, and R equal to infinity is the boundary of the space-time, and the black hole horizon actually extends in all the 3 plus 1 directions. So to study the question of the screening lens, we want to introduce the external quarks into the system. For Super-Yang-Mills itself does not contain a dynamical quark; they only contain adjoint matter. And we can introduce the fundamental external quarks by putting a probe disrepresented near the boundary of ADS. So again, this is the ADS black hole geometry. And then we put this rebrand there at some value of R. So I will normalize in terms of the horizon radius. So the lambda is a dimensionless number. So I put this rebrand at some value of R. And actually, strictly speaking, this is not a static configuration because the discrete brain wants to is attracted by the horizon, wants to move into the horizon and disappear. So this configuration only makes sense when lambda is much greater than one, so that you can treat the system as a quasi-static. So this setup only works when the brain is sufficiently far away from the horizon and only via the boundary. So the advantage of introducing such a system is that now, because this is a D-brain, and the D-brain can have open string ending on them, for example, you can have an open string stretch from this D3 brain in all the way into the horizon, and this open string ends on the D3 brain with a quark. So this is our external quark, and the mass of the quark is related by this quantity is proportional to the length of the string. And using my dimensionless number, which I introduced here, so the quark mass is given by lambda square root lambda times t. And so because I want lambda to be much greater than 1, so this is much larger than the square root lambda t. Right. Now I want to study the quark potential. So for this purpose, I introduce two quarks. One quark and one anti-quark. So when you introduce two quarks together, then it's more energetically favorable for this open string instead of going to the horizon and for them to connect to each other if their distance is not too far from each other. And so in the limit of large n and the large lambda limit, the quark potential, which is essentially the interaction between the quark and anti-quark, can just be captured by the energy of the open string connecting the pair. So you essentially just calculate the energy of the open string connecting this pair. And this Fourier stance to find in this classical black hole geometry how to find the shape of the string of minimal energy. So you find the minimal energy solution. And so this energy is always proportional to 1 over alpha prime. As I showed earlier, 1 over alpha prime is translated into square root lambda. So you get the potential of this form. So square root lambda times a function of t times L. This is because the series is conformal, so it's always a function of t times L. Now, if you move the quark farther apart, then you find at certain distance, it becomes energetically favorable for them actually just to stop at the horizon. Yeah, this should be green, or this should be blue. So, and if the distance is not enough, it becomes energetic because the distance becomes larger, so this is, the string will cause lots of energy. And then these two parts have nothing to do with each other, then they are screened. And then they are screened. So what's happening is that this function just suddenly drops to zero. No, this function is the leading order. This is the leading order term. This function will drop to zero, because there's a higher order term, which is non-zero.
Higher order in what?
A higher order in 1 over square root lambda. And so there's order 1 term here, for example, in the lambda. Of course, that term is not zero. And you have calculated that term. So we can read the distance when this function becomes zero to define as some kind of working definition of a screening length, because this leading order contribution to the energy vanishes. And so in the rest of the talk, I will use as my working definition of the screening length. And so just because of a conformal invariance, this screening length is given by just 1 over t, some number times 1 over t. So now we want to look at the quark potential at twilight velocity, as I motivated earlier. So this can be easily done. So we just move these two quarks. We just move this quark again, this should be blue. So you just move these two quarks. And again, just to see and to find the minimal energy string solution connecting these two moving parts. So the calculation is very similar to the static case. And since we all had the long days, I will spare you with the details of the calculation. And so that's the answer you find. So you find the screening length as a function of velocity. It's related to the screening length at the zero velocity by multiplying a factor 1 over v squared to the power of 1/4. Yes?
To get the screening length, what do you compare the connected string solution to?
You mean what background solution do we subtract?
Yeah.
Yeah, we subtract these drag solutions,
but
which people have been discussed. Right.
And I thought those have infinite energy, so how do you do the subtraction?
Oh yeah, you do the standard. You do standard technique. You do the. You regularize your brain. Your brain's at higher distance. We don't even regularize.
I'm talking about the infrared.
And the action you actually find is the finite action.
Finite action.
Right. In the rest frame of the clock. So we are moving. So we are considering the rest frame of the clock. So in the rest frame of the clock, actually have a finite action. So let me remind you that again earlier we find the
infinite energy.
Sorry?
Infinite energy. L equals to infinite energy.
Yeah. So if you have seen earlier that this screening length at zero velocity is related to 1/T, some constant times 1/T. So you can combine together, just looks like you have a higher temperature. So let me try to, so this is the result followed from the straightforward calculation. So let me try to give you a intuitive reasoning. This intuitive reasoning may not be correct, but does give you an intuitive feeling. So in the rest frame, so if you consider in the rest frame of a clock and anti-clock pair, and the medium is boosted. So the medium is boosted. If you boost your medium, and then the energy density of the medium actually is given by this standard boost factor square times the energy density at zero velocity. So the one factor comes from the length contraction because your energy density divided by the volume, and another factor just comes from the energy multiplication. So you get square. And now, if you recall that energy density is related to the T to the power 4, and then you can combine together, just seems like this particle is in the shower, is in the wind of effective higher temperature. So just essentially have effective higher energy density surrounding the clock there.
Didn't you just ignore the effect of the pressure getting boosted into the energy?
Sorry?
I mean, when you do that boost, the new energy density is not just proportional to the old energy density. There also involves a term involving the old pressure.
Yes. Right. Yeah, I said that this is only a heuristic reason. You're saying this. You're saying this relation is not correct.
Why is boosted temperature multiplied by 1, not by square root of 1?
Right. I don't know how to define a Lorentz boosting
temperature.
You see gamma in one direction, 1/γ in the other.
Right. Yeah, I don't know how to define a Lorentz boosting temperature. And the only thing I can define is a Lorentz boosted, just a roughly intuitive Lorentz boosted energy density.
But is it accidental that it is nu, not v, right here?
Sorry?
Is it nu, not v, right?
It's all v. It's all v. you have to blame Bill Gates for some reason. right. Yeah, it's all v. So nu is v here. So in all this talk, nu is v. Okay? So this intuitive understanding is not guaranteed to be right. And so you need to look at the right figure. So this just to give you a feeling how does the potential depend on the length and the distance between the quark, which is organized in terms of form pi L T. And so what you see, so this eta is the boost parameter. In standard boost parameter. And so for small boost, and the screen length is larger, and exactly you see the screening length becomes smaller and smaller. So the energy, yeah, so beyond the point, there's no longer any potential left. And so you also see at short distance, it has a very nice Poulin form. So at short distance, has a very nice Poulin form. Any questions? No.
So you're saying a moving trip size resolves quicker?
Yeah. Right. That's the point. So you already got the point. So.
But there are some people who argue, if you have finite nuclear and blah blah blah, then the opposite takes place because high velocity J side jump out.
That's the formation.
Right. Yeah. Formation.
There are effects in the opposite direction.
Correct.
Right. There are effects in the opposite direction has to do with the formation time, etc. Here, I'm concentrating on the screening effects.
But say if you are taking temperature close to zero, your screening length close to infinity, right? What does it mean?
Well, this is a conformal theory, so everything is defined in terms of T times L.
But it did happen. It was known for a long time that the screening length becomes shorter when you boost the harmonic of the Matsumian complex.
I see.
So the only surprising thing here is that you get the square root of gamma, not the gamma.
Oh, they find the gamma?
Yes.
I see. I didn't know that.
So this is your heuristic argument.
It's not correct.
Something is wrong.
Okay. It's good. No. Okay. And so now let's think about how does this screening size and the effect of the screening size reduced have any implication on the dissociation temperature. So as I said earlier, that the roughly you can define your dissociation temperature as the temperature which your size of your mass on is roughly the distance, or is the size of the screening length. And now, since we find the screening length scales with T like this, have such kind of velocity scaling, so this immediately suggests that the dissociation temperature as a function of velocity will scale with velocity like this. So 1 minus v squared times 1/4 to the temperature at 0. So what would happen in QCD? And what will happen if QCD has similar velocity scaling? So let me and since this kind of velocity scaling is let's see what would happen. So first let's ask the question: has the reached the dissociation temperature for J psi even at zero velocity? So phenomenologically, actually, there are two facts. Which one I mentioned earlier is that on the lattice, people observe that J psi may actually survive up to QTC. And also experimentally, people observe the similarity of the magnitude of J psi suppressions at the weak and SPS. And since SPS has a much lower temperature and energy density when weak, so this actually presented a puzzle. And this puzzle was one solution was proposed by the Kash, Kazev, and Sars, which they say that Rick actually has not reached the temperature, dissociation temperature of J psi, so that the J psi suppression you observed in the Rick came from the excited state, so not from the direct the J psi suppression. So this is a very appealing picture, so we assume that. So if we assume that, then we can ask, what happens if we believe combine the statement of the velocity and scaling and the fact that the weak has not reached the temperature of the dissociation temperature for the J psi? So we can draw a diagram like this. Again, remind you this is how the dissociation temperature scales its velocity. So suppose the J psi at zero velocity, the dissociation temperature, say it's around 2TC, the epsilon is somewhere higher. And then you can just plot this curve and to see how it depends on the velocity. And so if the weak temperature is around here, say, and below the dissociation temperature of J psi, and then you should see at some energy scale, Tt, the dissociation temperature of J psi will be reached, even at weak, just due to velocity effects. And then you should see a significant suppression of J psi, say, in the larger energy range, in the larger Pt range. Oh. So you would expect the significant suppression of large Pt, and so this of Ostrom. So this effect actually could be should be part of the modeling for the J psi suppression. For example, you compare between your theory, between your phenological model and experiments, and there could be significant at weak for LHC.
So what is J psi here in the string model? Because there are these U-shaped strings, right, that you attach to your brain, but you can have the ends at arbitrary separation, right?
No. Here, I'm not talking about J psi. I'm just talking about the screening potential. Yeah, just talking about screening potential. I'm just talking about screening lengths and how I would use the screening lengths to deduce how the dissociation temperature.
No, but I don't.
He hasn't constructed a J psi.
Yeah,
but I don't understand why this kind of dissociation of this bond state, why it doesn't depend on the size of the bond state.
No, I'm not talking about bond state yet.
It does.
But why?
You will see later.
Think about bond state.
Right.
I have another question. So you have two solutions. We have solution with parallel and solution with U shape.
Yes.
And one action crosses the other action, right?
Sorry?
One action crosses the other action and jump from one solution to another.
Yes.
If you have infinite time, then you jump from one solution to another. If it's a finite, there is a finite penetration time from one solution to another. This thing is moving. The question is, how long will it move in one in a stable configuration before it jumps.
So this is
small.
Right.
It doesn't happen instantaneous.
Good. This is a very good question, and we will debate it at the end. So let's debate at the end. Okay. So let me proceed. So actually, there's one important aspect. One important and curious aspect we observed is that in trying to find this potential between the two quarks, we observe the following, is that there's actually a critical velocity given by this form. When your velocity is greater than the critical velocity, then the path potential seems to cease to exist for the pair. And for example, you will get the imaginary answer. You won't get the sensible physical answer. And So intuitively, this makes sense because you would expect at certain higher velocity, maybe none of the meson can be formed. And if the screening length is really get tiny, so that you would expect
wait, it didn't form here. It
yeah, not form a meson.
You said the potential don't exist.
That's just the potential don't exist. If your potential does not exist, how can you talk about the mesons?
Oh, sure.
Right. So this seems to suggest maybe there's a speed limit for the mesons.
So is the limit that the quark mass is much larger than the temperature?
Sorry?
So is MQ much larger than the temperature? Because
this is a regime which MQ is much, much larger than square root lambda T. So that's the regime. And then I will talk about the regime which MQ is order of the square root lambda T. And there are many ways to see this velocity bound, which have been observed by all these people who are studying the Dirac solutions, because the Dirac solutions cannot go beyond this velocity.
But why potential should be real? Why shouldn't it be imaginary? We are moving in wind.
Yeah. So the potential can be imaginary, but then you cannot form a bound state. Yeah, here I'm interested in the question of the bound states. Yeah, so the
you can form for a while.
So this is the same bound which Derek also found.
Yes. So this is the same bound which everybody talked about this morning.
So write it in terms of gamma.
Right. People write in terms of gamma, write in terms of V, and in terms of explicit lambda T. And actually, there's a very
What about, say, some kind of column size? Because the size which enters here, the scale which enters here, m divided by square root of gamma, right?
Yes.
However, like a Coulomb scale, it's also could be there, and this scale would be something like lambda multiplied by m, right?
And you mean the Coulomb potential?
Yeah.
Coulomb potential is a scale.
It's like imagine that they,
yes,
they correlate, right?
Yes.
And this scale doesn't show up at all.
Which scale does not show up?
Coulomb scale.
Coulomb scale show up in the size of the meson.
Right, but I mean, doesn't show up here, right?
Yeah, doesn't directly show up here. Yeah, doesn't directly show up here, but yeah, that's correct.
So, with MQZ, that's a full thermal mass?
Yeah, that's, yeah, because we are considering the max mass limit, so this is just the quark mass, just the zero temperature quark mass.
Then there is a thermal mass correction which is negative, so we cannot create.
Right, that would be very small because I'm considering this limit. And in a little bit, when we.
But you need to go, you know, if I look at your formula, so that when V sub C to become negative, and Q should be square root of lambda T divided by 4. So
no, you're not. This is a small M result.
No, this is very small. Here, it's very small. Yeah, this fact is very small.
You'll see the full result a little later.
Right. So this seems to imply the speed limit for the masons. So. But there's actually a very simple way to understand this speed limit. It's the following. So there are many different ways to understand this speed limit, but there's a very simple way, simple intuitive way. So we are considering this quark moving on this probe plane. And because the space-time is actually curved along the arc direction, the local speed of light for a particle is actually smaller in the probe plane than in the Young-Mills theory itself. And especially, so this critical velocity precisely corresponding to the local speed of light on this probe is rebreak. And so this is perfectly sensible because you would expect, and you will not be able to define the potential or define a bound state sensibly if the particles move faster than the local speed of light. And we will see this picture again a little bit later in the true meson story.
But so then this has nothing to do with physics. It's just the breakdown of this probe T3 brain approximation.
No. This is very important for the physics, as you will see.
Right.
So this also calls for the question: maybe we need to really examine the true meson states, just to examine the true bound states to try to answer those questions like affirmatively. So now we want to go beyond the potential model. So far we have restricted to this range of MQ much greater than square root lambda T. So we want to consider the case which MQ is order of square root lambda T, for example. And also our current information and what I have discussed so far, the information about bound state is really very indirect just based on the potentials. And so we would like to study the mesons directly. So the adding flavors to ADS-CFT was developed a few years ago by Koch and Cox, which say you can add the NF hypermultiplex in the fundamental representations to N4 super Young-Mills theory, and then you can get the N2 series with some flavors. And on the gravity side, this can be easily achieved just by adding NF is three brains to the ADS5 times S5 geometry. So roughly the picture looks like this. So now this is my black hole. And in this picture you should imagine all the 3+1 dimensions have shrinked to a point. All 3+1 dimensions have shrinked to a point. And this direction and this direction are the direction orthogonal and are the 6-dimensional orthogonal to the 3+1 dimension in this 10-dimensional space. So the design brain sits somewhere in the transverse to this black hole, to this black brain, 3+1 dimensional black brain. And then because the open string again, the open string can end on these D7 brains, and those open strings provide the fundamental quarks, which we want. And the quark mass is essentially given by the vertical distance between the brain and the black hole. It's yeah at the heuristic level.
But it should be along the rim, it's not along the edge.
Yeah, I'm just saying if
it
you
should be a direction towards the
point. It's minimal distance between them. Yeah, the reason I draw this picture is because there's a subtlety. And of course, if you put the three brain there, the seven brain there, the descent brain cannot be really like a perfect flat because black hole attracts. So in reality, what you find is that the descent brain will curve a little bit to the black hole and form a shape like this. And so this was, I think, first worked out a few years ago. So this is the system that we use to study the mesons. So the advantage of this D7 brain system compared to the D3 brain system I discussed earlier is that I said that this D3 brain system is not really a static system because the brain wants to fall into the horizon. But the D7 brain, because this is a much bigger object, it's actually D7 brain can stabilize somewhere here. So this is a stable configuration. And in principle, you can also put the D7 brain close to the black hole. And then the fluctuation on the D7 brain will be generating mesons. So the mesons has been studied by this group of people. And essentially, you look at the open string fluctuations on this D7 brain. Oh, by the way, I borrowed this picture from this, borrowed this next picture from the paper by Matthias, Miles, and Thompson. And so the mesons just corresponding to the open string excitation of the D7 brain, because open string, as I showed you earlier, and one and the two points of open string ending on the D7 brain will correspond to quark and anti-quark. And so the generating open string excitations will be corresponding to the generating meson states. And the lowest nine mesons just corresponding to the field theory modes on the D7 brain. And those field theory modes corresponding to either the deformation of the D7 brain in the space-time, or corresponding to the gauge field on the D7 brain. So then you can it's a matter of solving equations to study what are the small fluctuations on the D7 brain to find the meson spectrum. So what you find is the meson spectrum behaves like this. Yeah, so this is a scale. It's a MQ divided by square root lambda.
So this is for the T.
Hmm?
The masses are for the T.
The what?
Near the lower limit over there, yes.
That's right. That's right.
But it is, if you look at the limit of small lambda, so is this scale goes to
large lambda?
Yeah, this is always limit of large lambda. It's always a limit of large lambda.
So it's very low line state.
Right, so it's a very low line state, so it's very tightly bound state. So this meson, so the mass is much smaller than the quark. So very high bending energy. So also you can study using this gravity picture what means by the meson dissociates, and this again was studied by these people, and what happens is that when you raise the temperature, the black hole becomes bigger, and then eventually touch your D7 brain, and then they become and then the D7 brain just goes into the black hole. And then you can no longer have, say, discrete meson excitations on the center. You only have a computer spectrum of problems.
Critical embedding, is there a second order phase transition?
Yeah, it's actually, so this is the technical point that we want to go into. So actually from here to here is a first order phase transition. So this point is actually a very tricky point. It's not really
it's metastable.
Right.
It's actually unstable.
Yeah, it's actually unstable by itself. The critical embedding itself is unstable. So to answer the question which I raised earlier regarding whether the mesons really have a speed limit, and how does the temperature, the dissociated temperature depend on velocity, we need to look at the mesons in the behavior of the mesons in the large momentum limit. So we are interested in the dispersion relation of the mesons in the large momentum limit. So earlier this year has been studied in this paper, in this paper by Matthias, Miles, and Thompson, which they studied the dispersion relation numerically for two different temperatures. And they observe something very interesting. So they find in the not, so that's the spectrum which you find. So this is a dispersion relation. So this is omega axis, and this is momentum axis. So they find in the large momentum limit, you have such a linear relation, but this Vc is not equal to 1. It's actually smaller than 1. You actually have a speed limit smaller than 1. And for example, for t equal to 0.98 and Td, and slightly before the, and below the dissociation temperature, you find the velocity drop to very small, and then you get another value. So they also observed, and just by comparing, that this Vc appears to be that the speed of light, the local speed of light at the tip of this T7 brain embedding. And this is actually consistent to our earlier result, which I quoted earlier regarding the velocity bound in this large mass limit. Because there we just have a D3 brain, the D3 brain just sits at the point. So for the D3 brain, there's no point, and there's no tip, just the D3 brain. So this picture actually are consistent with each other. So we did a more general analysis, trying to look at what is dispersion relation for all, say, for all temperature. So this is the work and which should appear with Aegis and Fokler. So we find that you can prove precisely that in the large momentum limit, the maximum wave functions actually become more and more localized at the tip of the brain. So for small momentum or for zero momentum, the maximum wave function actually quite spread out. But if you take the momentum become larger and larger, then you find that the wave function actually really localized at the tip of the brain. And then you can actually work out the dispersion relation in the large K limit analytically. So again, you have this form K times Vc. And then surprisingly, this times plus a constant. And this n corresponding to the radial excitations. So you can have different modes. So plus a constant term. So this is not a standard dispersion relation. And then this constant term can also be worked out explicitly in terms of the ratio between the horizon size and the radius at the tip.
And Vc is also given analytically.
Right. So Vc is given analytically, and it's always given by the local speed of light at the tip. So also you can check that in the small t limit or in the large and q limit, this agrees with exactly the result we found by looking at the semi-classical picture. And this semi-classical string I discussed earlier. So now you can actually draw a curve to map the Vc as a function of temperature from t equal to zero to dissociation temperature. So the physics around here, because it's the first order phase transition, so here it's a little murky. So around here, you should not trust it. But all around here, it's very robust. And so this region is a region of maximum and can be stable. So let us look at what's happening if you have at a fixed temperature, and then you see there's a velocity bound. There's a speed limit beyond this velocity, and there's no maximum can exceed that velocity. And also you can also look at the Pvan velocity, and then you find that this is the dissociating temperature, which is a function of velocity, which decreases when you increase your velocity. And the one very interesting feature is that near Tp, near the dissociating temperature, the critical velocity actually goes to zero. Actually become very small, even for arbitrary large momentum. So it's actually striking. So the maximum will really move at very, very slowly in the medium and close to the dissociation temperature.
Yes. I'm a little bit confused. So dissociation temperature was defined so that screening length is around about the same as meson size.
That was the loose definition.
1 second, that's a loose definition based on potential models. But if you can study the meson directly, then you don't need it. You can just study the spectrum meson directly as we are doing here.
So you define that it becomes stachyoid.
which mesons on the D7 brain are these? Are these all possible fluctuations in the D7 brain?
So for this particular figure, we just did it for the scalar fluctuations. Yeah, we didn't have, we have not done testing for the gauge field, the scalar fluctuations.
Probably the lowest scalar.
Yeah.
Okay, that's right. But the radial excitation does not affect the critical velocity, it affects the next.
Right. So again, you can actually fit this curve a little bit. So using the behavior at infinity, you can fit in this curve. So this curve is roughly like this, and then start to deviate away from the infinite mass. So let me summarize the story we have learned. So we find the velocity scaling of a screening lens. Yeah, it's going to finish very soon. And then we argued about velocity scaling of a dissociating temperature. We first argued from the classical stream picture, from the potential picture, and then we found it a completely consistent picture from studying the real mesons. And then we find then we confirm that there's indeed a speed limit for the heavy quark mesons. And it's very interesting, the speed limit. So the modification of the spectrum of the speed limit for the mesons moving in the medium is related to the total speed of light in this five-dimensional space-time. So when you are probing this speed limit for your quark mesons in your laboratory, you're actually probing some interior, the speed light in the interior of your fixed dimension. And also we observed there's a dramatic slowdown near the TB. So at least at the qualitative level, all these features, they seem to be quite reasonable. So it seems to apply, just at intuitive level, I would think they apply to any series, even though details may be different, any series with a gravity description, especially this feature. I would expect to be very robust. So it could be that QCD also have these features. So let's, now we have more solid knowledge of the meson dispersion relation in the medium. So let's try to ask the question of the JPSI dissociation again. So let us imagine the JPSI are formed at a really early stage of the heavy application. So this is assumption. Let me make this assumption to simplify the problem. So the JPSI at the very early stage of the collision, and then as time goes on, the medium starts forming around the JPSI, and the JPSI starts to see this whole medium. So at least in the vacuum, at first when it formed it in the vacuum and had the standard of the dispersion relation. Mm-hmm. And then made the assumption they formed the very early stage. It's not a vacuum, it's some kind of, it's not a thermal medium. And eventually the thermal medium eventually formed around them and then eventually disappear when they hydrogenize. So the question, what happens to the JPSI to this modified dispersion relation? What does the modified dispersion relation imply for this process? The medium form around the JPSI and then disappear. So this is a very complicated question. And I certainly don't have any answer, but I can pose a slightly simpler question. Just think about you have a JPSI with a velocity larger than the critical velocity in this medium. Suppose you have a medium, and then we shoot this JPSI into the medium. What will happen? Will JPSI break apart? Because the JPSI is not allowed to have such a big velocity. So if that happens, then we have JPSI suppression. Can it also be that somehow the JPSI interacts with the medium dynamically so that it actually remains stable, but actually slows down and survives in the medium? And if that's the case, then what happens when the medium disappears? Say, or from this picture, when you come out of the medium, and what happens to it what does dispersion relation means for them? And so especially if the temperature of the medium is very close, if the medium temperature is close to the dissociating temperature, we expect the gibbsite to travel very slowly in the medium. So will experiments be able to observe some kind of time delay that the gibbsite come out later than other particles? So these are all interesting questions we'd like to think about. And remember what I have last. Next transparency. So everybody have a wish list. And so I will also end with a vision list. Oh, right, this is not my vision list. Yeah, of course, this is transparent. So this is roughly the data to come. So right now, we have very low statistics on gibbsite with BT greater than 2, smaller than 5 dB. And essentially, no data for BT greater than 5 dB. And so this is a projection of the accuracy of the data for Phoenix in the week 2. So the accuracy, so the data will come, and we'll be able to probe the large PT region of the gibbsite. And so I will end with my vision list.
Yeah, going back to your static potential discussion for a moment before talking about mesons and applications, what you're calling the screening length is the length where the force between a quark and an anti-quark is no longer large compared to T squared, but becomes of order T squared. It's not zero. It's simply
I agree.
Some pure number times T squared. So for applications to QGP, it seems to me that's sort of significant. I mean, that's still a very significant attractive force between these heavy quarks. So it seems pretty bold to really think that you can identify that with the region where you can no longer have interesting binding. And I don't know how this would change the story of moving mesons, but it certainly seems like
This is a very good point. Certainly, this is something to think about. And but the one thing that we have seen is that this is a picture of the velocity bound, velocity V we get from that naive picture. Actually, that agrees very well with you get from the meson. Actually, they agree exactly. So that's what I call this working definition. So it's a definition which gives me the scale of the another precise numerical number. Just give me the scale of the quantum. And I think the scale does give you the right scale.
Also, I'm pretty much confused. So it must be, you're saying in one region of velocity is stable, in the other region it's unstable.
Yes.
First of all, in the other region, it's not as stable because it becomes emitting something because it's super luminal. But in the other region, what exactly does it mean? It must be in some approximation. Because if you put gibbsite in medium,
permanently,
and just wait long enough, it will dissolve.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
No matter what the statement that there is a bound state, yes, there is a bound state, but it could be excited. And
Yeah, you mean dissolve, you mean due to the collision.
If it's truly, the mass is truly heavy compared to the temperature, then
it's not.
In this D7 story, these states have zero width.
So this is the story in the large and the large lambda. So this is really the story at large NC and large lambda.
Yeah.
If you go away from that, so in the large NC and large lambda, they're really data function states. They're really sharp states.
Sure. But the distance between states the distance between states is much larger than temperature, so you cannot excite another state.
And you mean the distance between the quark? So the distance between levels is again is all controlled by this scale, lambda Q divided by square root lambda. So it's all controlled by this.
Okay, so lambda Q is this limiting one, and it becomes T.
So then it can be accepted.
That's right. So around the dissociation temperature, which is this is of order T, so this is the dissociation temperature. And then indeed the it can happen.
So you're saying this the mechanism I have in mind and you actually the same.
Yes.
In some sense.
Yes. So you are imagining something around that dissociation region.
It's more nonsense than a question. You asked whether this happens in QCD, and I remember that with SON we studied the terminal velocity of, or the limiting velocity of pipes.
Okay.
And you found it was here. You found it was here. No pipes above 16 inches.
You need a pion gas.
I remember the velocity of pions vanishes at
FTC. Right. But we are above TC, so
right.
It's all
yeah, about this paper is about the root.
Yeah,
it's
but
not wrong here. Yeah.
Well, but still, there is a meson whose dispersion relation is modified by the medium in such a way that the limiting velocity depends on the temperature.
Yes.
You accelerate it, yes. And it doesn't go to the speed of light, but it.
Which limit? Is Q goes to zero limit or Q?
So in this case, there is no large or small. Right. It's just linear dispersion equation with changing.
Oh, I have one
velocity. Obviously, you can perturb it with small mass. Whose velocity depends on the temperature, and this velocity
goes to zero when you reach TC.
When you reach TC, and this is the point where you can sink the pine.
Right. Yeah. I think it's a similar type of philosophy.
Very nice.
Yeah, it's similar type of analog.
I should have thought of it. Sorry.
And in this case, I was wondering if your mesons, because we didn't really use much of the properties of the pion being the only. What is important in this case is that the pion is a ghost on board. But
I think
the reason that we. What we used for this fact for is to write effective theory for the pi,
right?
Because it's the lightest,
right.
You can do it. And then there are just coefficients which whose ratio determine the velocity. And we could see that the coefficient of the spatial gradients vanishes as well.
Yes. So
I was wondering if because your method is allied. Compared to, but not compared to the temperature, right?
No.
So it's a very different case. It's not related to the stability question.
Yeah, but you can ask whether your technique can be used for
other
for charm fuck.
So many.
Okay. Can you go back to the dispersion relation for meson, where you have this VCK plus something?
No, right. Plus a constant, right. Plus constant, that's right.
Yeah.
Right.
What is epsilon?
Epsilon is the ratio between the R0 and
R0
over
RT.
Right.
So near the critical temperature, dissociation temperature is
epsilon equal to
omega.
One.
Omega goes to a constant.
Omega is constant.
That's right.
So does it match it with the. So at large k, your mesons have a finite fixed
spacing
between
yes.
them.
Right.
At k equals zero, you also have a finite spacing.
Yes.
Do they match?
No.
I think the exact spacing don't match, but they should correspond to the same trajectory.
Yeah. Right, but then the question is, did you look at sufficiently high excitation to see if the velocity is monotonous? Function of k, where the velocities exceed the critical velocity.
So that's a very good question. I think at least for the lower lying mesons, for the lower lying states, they are monotonic. But I don't know for large excitation, we don't know yet. That's a very good question.
Yeah.
In ordinary materials, if you have a particle moving faster than the local speed of light, you get a chunk of radiation.
That's right.
And unless you supply energy to the particles, it's going to slow down.
Yes.
Is there any relationship of that physics to this?
Yes. So this is a very good question. So this is actually a question we have been thinking about. So if you consider a quark moving faster than this local speed of light, which is still smaller than the speed of light, say, in the vacuum. And then if you try to find the string solution, you will actually find a space-like string solution. And then you actually find the action of the string is actually imaginary. So it looks like you have something smaller than one. So one question is whether this could be related to the Cherenkov radiation. We don't know yet, but this is a possibility.
Is there something one should worry about that it doesn't appear that the dependence on K is analytic or omega on K is analytic?
Yes, it's not analytic, that's right.
And
but that's fine.
It is fine?
Yeah, it just means that there's a branch point that K could infinity.
This is
square root, some kind of square root.
K equals zero.
This is not an K equals zero result.
Right, this is K could infinity.
Ah,
yeah, so means there's some kind of branch point that K could infinity.
Sorry, I just
thought
that.
Right. Right. It's only as a right. One more question. So velocity less than critical, there is no friction of any kind.
Sorry?
No friction or energy loss or anything.
You mean just smaller than speed of light. That's right. There's no drag. That's right.
That's just order root lambda t squared.
Right. So this is, of course, only because
it's a tiny
size.
Yes. That's right.
That would be
should be. That's
somewhere there should be.
Physically,
right.
There
has to be.
Yeah,
good for that. Then we go to the questions and the long day.